Everything will be good. All right. So we're doing a little careless yesterday. So so we started with the idea of the experimental, right? Right. Okay. So we mentioned that that keheles is really like Chazal say that you're not allowed to give away the sod tamei mitzvahs to the umos olam. So what is it? What is the sod? The sod tamei mitzvahs. The sod. I mean, it's one sod. I mean, it doesn't say sodos. It says sod tamei mitzvahs. Rashi says. So he said the pshat is that because in our system there is a sod, and that sod is that our system functions on two levels. On one level, it functions like a dos, and there's certain things that we must do because of because it's a dos. It's a das emes, the true das, but it still is a das. I mean, you can't just it's not just a philosophy; it's a das. But the truth of the matter is that our das ultimately is converted into a philosophy. In other words, the higher the person gets, the higher the level of the person. So the less he does things because of a das. When a person does things because of a das, he does it because of an obligation, because of a loyalty. Because he has to do it, so he does it in a different way, which means that he does it basically, he gets up to daven, so he's higher than tefillah. So he does it, now he feels good, okay, daven, he feels good, he did what he was supposed to. He's conscientious. So that's the concept of doing things in terms of dust. Most people, that's what this is for them all their lives. I mean, they don't rise above that. But the few that do, for them, the whole yahadus becomes a different experience. It simply naturally does it because that's just like any philosopher who would arrive at a truth would naturally follow that truth because it's true. So the same thing is the case in yahadus because that's what the Rambam says. Rambam says in the Hilchos Tshuva, he says va'osa as Lashon says mitnei shulemis. That's actually the Lashon HaRambam. So you see that a person can reach a level, it's possible for a person to reach a level where all the mitzvahs that he does is simply not because of obligation, not because he has to do it, not because of a das, but because it's emes. Because he just does a simple, very simple reason. Because it's emes. He says, right, long that Dovah Shabolam. He says, Ella osa emes v'neishu emes. That's it. Osa emes v'neishu emes. So that means he just like gets up in the morning to, he has to eat, he has to drink, he has to take care of himself. That's emes. This he does the same way. That's really the pasuk, v'ata Yisrael mora shemo kecha shel meimcha. That all these things are just, that's just reality. So there are people that the higher a person gets in Yahadis and the more knowledge he gains of it, the less he does it because of a dos, and the more he does it because simply it's emes. Until he reaches a level where everything he does is just because of emes. Okay, there's no obligation, and he doesn't feel any burden, and he doesn't feel any relief after he does it because it's simply that's the emes. That's it. So keheles, really, we explain that that's what it means, a sod, you can't megala to the masolim. You can't megala that sod to the masolim, to show them. Doesn't mean you can't show them, because you're really supposed to show them ki chokhmas chum v'nas chum l'ini amim. So you're supposed to show them that every mitzvah has infinite chokhmah. But that's on a particular level. But as a totality, to show them what the whole dust really is, that it's nothing more than the emes, and it's not really a dust even, underlying everything is just simply the emes, menesho emes, that you're not allowed to reveal. Because the umos olam have to look at it as a dos. Once they see it's not a dos anymore, that's it, they're gone. So that's really, that was the haftarah, yesterday's haftarah, that ultimately the umos olam will recognize that the pasuk says that this shmi odia besoch ami Yisrael, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will teach Klal Yisrael, they will understand the Shem Hashem, and the Goyim will know V'yadu ki ani Ad Hashem Kadosh B'Yisrael. So it means that that's the way the Umos HaOlam will be makir. So they can't be makir direct. direct. Direct is not pasul. It's only because they'll know that the Klal Yisrael that has this dus, this unbelievable dus, where everything is based on chachma, and it's all unbelievable chachma, every single mitzvah and every detail. When they see that, they'll say that the chachma Yisrael, they really have knowledge of God. The other can't hear Hashem kadosh be Yisrael. That's what I mean, that Yisrael understands the kedushas Hashem, how God is different and removed, and what Yichud Hashem means, and the ideas of Kadosh Baruch Hu. They'll understand that through the dust, but the dust has to be there. So ultimately, lasid lavo. You see, lasid lavo. Yeah, that's one of the shruas in Gemara Ksubas, the Kufir Aleph. That's one of the shruas. Is you're not allowed to take that away from the Yuma Solon, because the whole purpose of the Gula is because of Kiddush Hashem B'Umos Olam. That's the whole purpose of Navi says Yecheskel said. So therefore, so that's the idea. So the entity, the element of dust, can never be revealed. Even among Israel, you can't reveal Sodos to everybody. But there are people that you can. But in Umos Olam, you can't reveal. You're not allowed to reveal. What? Not even a Ben Noach. Not even a Ben Noach. Can't reveal. Can't reveal. So, yes. That's what the Navi says. At the end, they'll bend everything. There's a very few people that could do the Emes fully because of the Emes. Most Jews will be gone. Everyone was not allowed to reveal Sodos to anybody. Almost only rare individuals. That's a went over that many times. Right. That's all. Okay. I'm not gonna go. Okay. Yes.
Through
Tarek and Bais. Yeah. Correct. But for most people, you can't reveal the underlying ideas of the dust, because they'll bend the whole dust. They have to work differently. They have to work. They're not ready. Most people are not ready for to live with absolute knowledge. Is very, very. It takes a person. I mean, years of, even if a person is a great person, it takes years of working on themselves. And it's not something that anybody can do. It's like Ram says, perfection is not something that you're born with. It's not something which is easily attained. And it takes years of working on oneself to attain a semblance of it. The problem is, as I said yesterday, the problem is that at some point, all right, whatever. Let's get back to this. So the question is like this. So that's the that's why not let her reveal the dust, the ideas of the soda dust. What the dust really is, so not let her reveal to herself. Okay. So we mentioned that in Kehelis, really, Kehelis is an unbelievable sefer, and if a person really understands it, it's concepts which are of a primary knowledge, but they're and it can really change a person's life. This is one thing I want to say. I mentioned yesterday that in the 20s, so the world was very excited with Sigmund Freud's invention of psychoanalysis, discovery of psychoanalysis and the method, and the world was very excited because they felt that now we could change our personalities. And so it turned out it wasn't true. Freud never really said that. And his discoveries were limited to certain cases and a lot of insight into the personality, but not really real change. But there is one system that can change a person's life, and that system is Yahdus. That is in a different, in a certain, very unique way. But it can really change a person's life. Absolutely changes is the nature of his existence. But that's a claim that only Yahdus makes, and can only be realized through the method of Yahdus. But Kehelis, I would say, is something which, if a person really understands it, it can really change his life. It can really change his life. But not everybody, as I said yesterday, it depends on how much of a free agent the person is. Not everybody's a free agent. There are two problems. Not everybody's a free agent, because if you're going to show somebody that what they're doing is, and that's one of the dangers of knowledge, if you show somebody that what he's doing is stupid, so it's very nice if he has an option. But if he doesn't have an option, then you simply destroy the person, because bottom line is, they really can't do it, so they have no choice. Most people don't have the freedom over their psyche to be able to just direct energies here and there. I mean, most people, their energies are fixed because of certain factors, fixed in place, and they really don't have that much room to play around. So it can only be helpful ultimately to a person that has tremendous freedom of energy. But even a person has less, so they can't to some extent. They could accomplish something. But it is really ideas that can change a person's life, because insofar as a person can, as I say, because it really analyzes the most important area of life where people put their energies in, which is into their pleasures. Okay, and that's really what Kahalas is. It's an experimental analysis of human pleasure, of human pleasure. Now, that's why in this experiment he has every single conceivable pleasure. We'll see what exactly it entails. But the first idea that we wanted to mention was the concept that Plato says and that Yehudas in general agrees with, and that is that insofar as a person enjoys anything which is of this world, any enjoyments in this world, he definitely is removing himself from the enjoyments of the true world. I mean, it's impossible to be otherwise. It's impossible from a quantitative standpoint, but more, we mentioned, from a qualitative standpoint. Because it means that insofar as the person has energy in those areas, it means that he simply doesn't realize what the true areas are. It's like Shlomo says, "Kol chafot sechol yishvula." There's no comparison. So insofar as the person is putting, it's a qualitative idea. As far as the person is putting energies into any kind of material enjoyments, it means they simply aren't masig. They don't understand what the other enjoyments are, and they can't partake of those pleasures, of those enjoyments. So it's a qualitative phenomenon. Qualitative phenomenon. Insofar the person who is enjoying the material world, for the individual that knows what the other world is an unfortunate person. I say unfortunate because the person really knows exactly how frustrating these types of enjoyments are. You see, I mean, it's not a matter that there's a difference between dos and between the emes. A dos person thinks, well, you've got to be at a higher level. You have to strive higher, you have to learn, you have to, you know, do things that are of a higher nature. But a person that understands it, it's a matter of like, this is, it's crazy. It'd be like a person that has in front of him a gold mine and a garbage heap. And the question would be, should he go take some little things, little scraps he can find in the garbage heap, or go to the gold mine? I mean, it's like an insane choice. So that's the same thing over here as well. That insofar as the person partakes of the material world, he doesn't have the real enjoyments of life. He doesn't have it. It's unfortunate. It's an unfortunate state. And of course, I mean, that's the major answer for the question of Rasha V'Tovla. This is just not possible, Rasha V'Tovla. That's simply not possible. That means he's an unfortunate person. He's tied to the material. It's just not possible. Okay. But anyways, I'm not going to go further on that one. But anyways, don't ask me now. What is the kasha? Okay. But that's the reality. Now, but as I said before, Chazal hold, like Plato held as well, that insofar as a person participates or partakes of the material pleasures, it's not simply the material pleasure, but the pleasure has an effect which causes the person to feel that, or to be convinced, I should say, that is the good. Okay? That is the good. Because he can't help it. Because it feels good, and he has to, that's good. That's good. And as much as he'll try to argue it away, he can't. So there is a, that's what Chazal mean, huri avera kashim avera is not a paradoxical statement. It's a very simple statement. What it means is the mice avera itself is evil. But the fact that it entraps the person's preoccupations, because that's what a person really is preoccupations, so that's really the evil, that it takes the person's energy, his preoccupation. So that's a hurry of a question there. Yeah, so the question is, how can he do this experiment? How can he do this experiment? Because in the experiment itself, he will be causing himself to completely become contaminated, so to speak, by the Mice of Error itself. The effects of the Mice of Error will destroy his soul. So how could he do it? That's the question. And the other side of the question was, how is it possible to have a legitimate experiment? See, and he says, the pasuk says, Af chachmasi amdoli. So Af chachmasi amdoli means that, no, that's exactly what he's saying. He says, even though I did all these things, but my chachma was never compromised. Umda, it was firm. Af chachmasi umdali, it stood by me, unimpaired, you see. So, unaffected. So, if that's the case, I mean, how's that possible? It seems to be against what the Chazal is saying, against what the philosophers, the true philosophers say, and it's an impossibility. So we proposed an answer as follows, that when a person, you see, the reason why the soul becomes contaminated, becomes destroyed, is because of the fact that the conviction enters from the sensation and the experiential phenomenon. Which affects the idea of the good. Has to affect the idea of the good. Everybody has to affect the idea of the good. But the thing is like this, that's only for an individual that entered into that situation willingly. In other words, he willingly entered into the situation, and now he experiences a pleasure, so now his soul has to say, well, this must be the good. It feels good. He can't overcome that, you see. But that's only because he entered into it willingly. But in the case of Shlomo Melech, where he entered into it for only one purpose, and that was simply in order to know the truth, so that person will not be affected. So that's why he remained. That's why I said Af Chachmasi Amdali, because he did not enter it into. He didn't enter into the pleasures because they were attractive to him. See, if it's the attraction, so then it shows you that the soul itself is in a certain state. And now he experiences it, and now he's convinced. And as much as later he's not convinced, but at that moment something has taken place. And then the soul has been changed. And now it's too late. Now it's not gonna go away. So so that's true insofar as an ordinary human being who enters into these things because he's drawn to them and they're attracted. But a person like Shlomo HaMelech, who entered into it for only one reason, because of the fact he wanted to pursue and determine a certain truth, whether some a certain thing is true or not, that was an experimental case. So for him, he remained unaffected. Af chachmasi amdoli. That's what it means. Okay.
I thought there was exactly a little bit more than just that.
That's the other side of that. That's the other question. Okay. And I want to mention, Avi Putney mentioned something which is very excellent. And that is that you see we have the same concept with regard to Shabbos. Of course, you have Onig Shabbos. And you see the Torah, Simchas Yontov, Onig Shabbos. So what does that have to do with Kiddush there? The holiest day of the year is Onig, and Onig involves every possible one, not on Shabbos, but the enjoyments, pleasures on Shabbos. So why is that so? The answer is because Yehadis maintains that if the person, that's why it's like the Vilna Gaon said, and others, it's Onik Shabbos. If the person does it only because of, it should reflect the Kedushas Hayom and the ultimate Oz Tisanag Al Hashem, it's a reflection of us, the Sanag Al Hashem. If that's why he engages in the pleasure, then the pleasure, on the contrary, and then the pleasure is beneficial. It's an interesting thing. That's why Yadis maintains. So that's a principle he said in Yadis. So you see that same idea. Right? The same idea is that's the same idea as Kehalis. That's really the same idea, the same concept. See, that concept holds true. Yehadis maintains it depends why the person, if the person is lured by the pleasure, he enjoys the pleasure itself, then it's then on the contrary, and then the soul is drawn away. But if it's something he enters into it only because of this is a kedushas hayom, and it reflects the Yos Tisanag al Hashem, the ultimate Tainug, that's why he's doing it, so then it does not affect him at all. The contrary. It's something which is not affected. It's an interesting concept. But that's on Shabbos. On Shabbos, on Yantav, some Chos Yantav. That's a big premise in the Das. So, yes. The Gemara says, I mean, Af Chachma, the plain shot is very good. Af Chachmasi Umdali means, but Af, Eve also, because you would think that it would compromise my Chachma. No. Af Chachmasi Umdali. It also stood by just like before. Nevertheless, okay? That's the. But Chazal say that Af Chachmas, but that's obviously not Pshita Shel Mikra. So Chazal dashing a, what Chazal is saying is, I don't know whether it's a smachta to remember it, Af Chachmas, I mean, that's not Pshita Shel Mikra. But what Chazal is saying is that. And it's true that with regard to this, it does fit in here, because what they're saying is that how is he able to withstand the pleasures, the effect of the pleasures, because of the type of chachma that he had, the chachma that he learned ba'af. Chachma learned ba'af means that there's a kind of person that's, as Rambam said, like a person that learns. He wants to enjoy himself and relax and learn. He says that the person cannot really be kind of car that way. It has to be a painful kind of removal from the ordinary. And if he can't do that, then he can never be zoch in the Kesser Shel Torah. It's a tough, it requires a certain toughness on the self. Can't be just, you know, it's nice to sit and relax, you know, and sit and learn and enjoy life. It's a nice picture, but that's not the way the person is really Kona Torah Bishnei Musa. The Kona Torah, the Kesser Shel Torah, says it can't be Vilashem. And Ein Divatayin Dikim Mishim Misrapa Atzmalay. Mishim Misrapa and Misrapa Atzmalay. It means that he's easy on himself. That's not the way the person Kona Torah. You have to be tough on yourself. It requires a certain hardness towards the self. A person that likes himself too much, that babies himself too much, and you can't really be Zohar Kesher Torah. Kesher Torah requires a harshness against the self. So that's what Af Chachmasi means. How come it always happens? I got louder. Are we there? Yeah, but that's what I'll say. Afkach must say something else. What's that? The Zayasa. But I'll tell you what it means. Why? Oh, so what happened? How come I was going to first?
Oh, it does go, but then it gives you a warning.
But it's not going. Oh, we had this last time. Remember, we figured it out.
Yeah, I know, but we did last one.
Would a regular phone be better? Would a phone with a speaker be better? Phone with a speaker? The phone speaker works good. Oh, it's taping? Oh, I don't know. The taping's not dependent on that. Okay. Okay. Now, I think you're right. I mean, there's no question that it's connected, but now I'm thinking into it. It's like this. Because you see, the af chokhmasi, what does it mean, a chokhma shalamarati, the af? What it means is like this, that there is abstract chokhma. It's a certain realm. There's abstract chokhma, which is just the person's intelligence. That's abstract chokhma. Person learning a sugya in Bav Basra. Okay, that's a kind of it's intelligence. It's chokhma. That's not chokhma shalamarati ba'af. You see, I mean, even though I never everybody wants to say that you have to learn ba'af, but I don't think that's what it means. Because chokhma shalamarati ba'af does not mean that, because that's pure chokhma. That's pure enjoyment. On the contrary, if the person would try to impose some kind of force in that situation, that's detrimental. His mind has to be completely engaged and free, you see. But there is a chachma that has to do with you, that has to do with your life, and with your emotions, and with redirecting and directing your emotions, you see. That's a chachma shalamarati ba'af. That requires an af. See, that requires a harshness towards the self, an anger towards the self, to be able to no matter how hard it is, to break it. You see, that's a different kind of, that's a chachma, the chachma with regard to the individual's personality. That's a chachma shalamarati ba'af. So what Chazal is saying is, af chachmasi umdali, that chachma allowed him not to be affected by the pleasures. You see, that's the chachma. Where? I'm not sure. I don't know. I got to go. But by Keset Torah, what the Rambam is saying is something else. That maybe you could say it also comes under this in a way, because it means that the person can't be misrapa atzma. It means a person that really is after Torah can't be misrapa atzma. He can't, just like the Rambam says, he can't be looking for a luxury. He's interested in like luxuriating with chachma. That kind of an attitude. He sits back, relax, has a cup of tea, he's enjoying himself and he's thinking, and this is his ideal. If this is his ideal, we'll never be zocher kesh tara. Kesh tara means an unmitigated desire for the truth. So it has to be, he has to permeate him, his soul. But I think what Chazal is saying over here, chachma shmarati ba'af, means that the chachma which always has the character of af. And the chachma, the character of af, is the chachma that deals with a person's own self, his own inner world. The inner world requires an af, because otherwise you can't accomplish anything. So af chachmas yom belief fits in very well. Okay, but anyways, so the answer to the question is, like we said, because he entered it not because of a attraction to the pleasures, but because of this, his search for the emes. So that's why it was unaffected. Okay. But now the other question. The other question is that since he did it that way, is it really a good experiment? Correct? And that's the question. Is it a good experiment? Because already he has part of him removed. So one answer we gave is the Gemara, the Chazal say, talk about the Ashmedai, which the Ashmedai, I'm not going to go through the whole thing. I mean, we have went through it for a number of shurim, I believe. But the basic idea was, if I remember correctly, the idea was that he had a he had an unbelievable ability to channel his energies into certain areas completely and then remove himself. He had a tremendous freedom of control over his inner world, his inner psychic energies. And the in other words, when it says that Shemach was a chacham mikaladim, it doesn't just mean he's the smartest man. It means that he was structured in a way that would lend itself to unbelievable chachma, So he was able to do that, to undergo a change of personality, and then come back, and then return. So that's one job. But let's keep the question in mind as we proceed. The next, the point we proceeded to yesterday was that the thing that stands in the way, and that's why I say that is that one of the difficulties in attaining this kind of knowledge, which I mentioned, can really change a person's life, to an unbelievable degree, is first of all the freedom I mentioned, but the second thing is that it would make a person stand alone. Because like the Rambam says, the fact that a person knows that somebody exists miles away already is something that removes an individual's loneliness. Loneliness is a powerful force in man. So the people don't realize the satisfactions that are coming to them without understanding them, but they're being fed into their system. And one of them is the fact that you feel you're with everybody. And the way essentially you identify with people is by their likes and dislikes. I mean, that's the most basic method of identification, likes and dislikes. So that's why you see generations are apart, because the likes and dislikes change. This music, that music. It's a break of breach of identification. The what does Shlomo say? Gam ha'avosom gamsin osom, about the dead. Gam ha'avosom gamsin osom kvar shochacha. What does it mean? Because most people, that's what they are, the likes and dislikes. You like this, like that. If the likes are, the likes match, so then there's identification. So for a person to really go against what the whole world likes, every, you look at a magazine, a paper, this, the television, wherever the person goes, all culture is saying that these are the enjoyments. So for a person to break away from that and to be totally removed is an unbelievably difficult thing, because they're isolated, completely isolated and completely alone. And it's a very difficult thing for a human being, an ordinary human being, to do. It is the thing that the Torah requires of us. Nevertheless, the Torah does require that of us, that we have that ability to do so. It's Avraham Avinu. Kol Olam Me'ev Erecha. I mean, that's Kol Torah Kula. That one thing is the Yisodin Kol Torah Kula. But nevertheless, it's not easy. It's not an easy thing to do. And that is a big problem. I would say those are the two problems, two difficulties in learning from Kalis. But the thing you have to remember is that I think that can help a person insofar as that is concerned is the realization that nobody has gone into this area. And everybody who you see who are very content, so to speak, or claim to be content and claim to have a good life, because that's what most people will claim, regardless of whether it's true or not, the fact is that no one, and I say no one because, I mean, it's not that I've checked every human being. I'm just saying I haven't seen, you haven't seen anyone that has really made, on the whole, generally speaking, people in the world that have any knowledge of what's going on in this area. Zero. I mean, most people have absolutely zero knowledge in this area. And the fact is that people are fooled because they see intelligent people living a certain lifestyle and they assume that there must be some truth or some reality to it. But there is zero reality to it. Just because if you ask any one of these people what their lives are about, they haven't got the shallowest ideas emerge. I mean, the stupidest, most ridiculous. I mean, just look at the papers every day and the magazines and the television, all these things. You see the shallowness is unbelievable. I haven't got an inkling of one solid idea around which their life revolves. So you have to realize, I mean, that's an important realization. But we mentioned yesterday, we said, as an example, if you approach a very successful businessman who enjoys his prominence and his esteem and his whatever his fame, that he's his accomplishments. So the person would say, if you say to him, you say, well, what do you mean? You start analyzing life. He would say, what are you talking about? I enjoy it. This is the greatest enjoyment for me. And people respect me. I have position. Important deals come my way. People look up to me. I mean, I'll say his argument would be, I enjoy myself. How could you possibly say that this is something that requires analysis? The bottom line is it's an experiential thing. So I said, you have to be able to see the refutation of that thing, because it's like a simplistic thing, but it's a tremendous, I think it's the biggest block for the average person. It's the biggest block for the average person. But this, oh, here we go again.
Oh, no.
What is that? You do 70?
Yeah, it is.
Same
when you.
Maybe it'll go away. All right. Oh. Okay. As we were saying, three phones ago, the thing is that probably the most powerful influencing factor that dissuades people from an analysis, like I said, most of the world, or for practical terms, say all the world, has not made any advances in this area. Okay, showing off the last one. So with all the knowledge of psychology, this, and in general, man has remained on a totally primitive level with regard to this area. It's an unbelievable thing. There's no progress, zero progress in the internal world, in spite of all the progress in the external world. And all the progress in the external world will not affect one iota of the progress in the internal world in a direct manner. You see even today, a person can be a sophisticated individual and have the most insane idea. You know, I mean, that his body is going to be blown to bits and he's going to be enjoying sex. I mean, insanity. I mean, nothing less than insane. But the external world does not affect any progress in the internal world. Zero. So, but one of the things that I believe prevents a person from approaching this area is the fact that a person experiences a tremendous pleasure. And once a person experiences that pleasure, he feels that you can't argue that away. It's unassailable. He's a successful man. He does experience the feeling of success, a powerful feeling. And how could you argue that away? Okay. And because of that, people go on, one person, another person, hundreds and thousands and millions of people go on without the slightest understanding or the slightest knowledge or the most simple idea to explain what's going on is lacking. Okay, no thought, zero thought. So that's why I said that you have to understand the refutation to that point, which is, but I am experiencing a tremendous enjoyment. It's tremendous enjoyment. There are moments when the person's enjoyment is at the height. I mean, is extremely powerful. Okay. And that's what that kind of a person will argue. But I asked, what is the answer to that? What is the refutation to that argument? It's a simplistic argument, but a tremendous block. See, certain arguments are forceful. Certain are just preventative. Like, it's simple, it looks clear, and that's it. It stops any kind. You can't penetrate the argument. It's like a kind of argument. It's a block, you see. But there is a decisive blow to that argument. Okay? Anybody?
That happens.
Let's
say I have a response today. Right. And you're on the phone with that client. Okay? You don't seem like you're having pleasure. You're aggravated at that thing.
Right.
And you're waiting for a drink. So, at what point exactly is that pleasure
right.
that you're discussing?
That's
correct. So I think
you're lying. You're absolutely right. As a matter of fact, if you study the biographies of these people, you'll find that they have miserable lives. They're totally miserable lives. They don't even have the simple enjoyments that the people that they look down upon have. Okay? I mean, it is true. It is true. But the question is still not answered, because that's still a dilemma. That's still a dilemma. Because you see, but they do have these great moments, even though they're crazy. You know, you go into their personal lives, you'll see they're wrecks. Their family life, the misery, and then usually the end is, if you read the biography, the end is usually pretty bad. So if these things are so great, I mean, you know, somebody told me that one of the famous people wrote a book recently, and they said that when they got into the society of the super wealthy, they mentioned that how come no one knows? This is the greatest secret, that these people, who everybody thinks are just, you know, luxuriating on fancy yachts, are really the most miserable people on the face of the earth. I mean, so this person that was introduced to this society, they were saying that, how come no one knows about this? You know, they were amazed that nobody knows the real truth behind their lives. And that is true. There's no question that is true. But it still is a dilemma, you see, that I'd like to give an answer that explains that too. You know what I mean? Explains that too. Because, of course, the person will always hang on to the possibility that maybe this was wrong, maybe that was wrong. But I am experiencing this great pleasure. Okay, so there must be other reasons why this is all happening. And everybody try to find the 100 reasons. Other people say, well, look, you know, the guy, the people that win the lottery, they wind up in worse debt and misery, and they lose their friends and everything. Okay, fine. But is that person saying, I'm not going to win the lottery? No. Must be this reason, that reason, some other reason, but I'll be able to, I'll be able to handle it, you know? So that's the argument, again, that's why I say the argument's a block. You know what I mean? You're right. You could show rationally that it can't be, because you can't tell me that everybody is missing out because of this reason, that reason. There must be something wrong here. I mean, you're right. But objective. And no doubt you're right. But as you see, there's a certain kind of an argument that still is a block, because the fact is that the person's I is fixed on those pleasures, which are powerful enjoyments to them. They sense them as very powerful enjoyments. And that, as long as their eye is fixed on that, so to speak, all the other arguments are kind of like fall by the wayside. You know what I mean? Or they'll try to answer it. Okay, it's a good kashi. If they, yeah, that's not gotten to me. He was different. You know, I mean, that person's going to, because they're fixed, tied tightly to the thought, or the picture of those great moments and those great enjoyments and how they would feel under these situations. Yeah, but the answer is like this.
Are you basically saying that one moment justifies their lifestyle?
Yeah. But no one's I'm not arguing. What I'm trying to do over here is to try to show you what the refutation is, so that it shouldn't function as a block. See, that's what I'm trying to show you. You know what I mean? Because you can argue different kinds of arguments, but I'm just telling you, it seems to me clear that this is why people can't make any progress in this area. Why is it nobody made progress in this area? I mean, it's very simple, it seems, but no progress. Why not? But the answer is because there's something that stops, and that is the picture of this great enjoyment that the person feels convinced that were they in that position, they'd be experiencing. And arguments fail, you see.
You have to prove
intrinsically that it's a fraud. That it's a fraud. Yeah? See, that's a side argument. That's a side argument. But you have to show intrinsically why it's not.
Pleasure is something that shouldn't involve
Yeah, and so these are very nice arguments. I'm just telling you, that's what I was going through yesterday, that I'm saying you got to knock down this argument directly. You're telling me there are many arguments you can use, but I'm saying there's an argument you have to use that gives a decisive blow to this whole picture, you see? But the answer like this. The answer is that what is the person presenting you with? The person is presenting you with instances of great pleasure, psychological pleasure, whatever it is, you know, self-esteem, great, you know, unbelievable moment or picture of grandeur and greatness and a kind of a captivating pleasure. Okay, captivate, right? Yeah. But you have to realize that pleasure is very dependent on condition. For instance, you can have a slave that is elated. You see, he's elated because his master recognizes him today. You see, so he's elated. Or you can have a person that's starving, and they will experience the most fantastic sense of pleasure if you'll give them a glass of water. You see, they're unbelievable. So you have to realize that a captivating moment is no indication whatsoever of the person's state of existence. Because the most miserable people have captivating moments. Do you follow what I'm saying? You see? That is really the flaw of that argument. Because the argument stands on an experiential, captivating moment of elation and satisfaction and everything that a person can wish for. But you have to realize that such a captivating moment can emerge in the lowest individual, in the lowest state at certain moments, you see? So that's no proof of anything. The slave will be extremely happy because for months his master didn't recognize him. And today his master said he's great. And he'll feel, wow, unbelievable, great day for me. You see? But he's a slave. Would you want to be a slave? Because is that moment, that captivating moment, indicate anything about the realm of the individual's existence? Zero. See, it's a fraud. It's a fraud. Because a momentary pleasure or sense of elation can exist in the lowest, most miserably laden framework. As a matter of fact, there's more reason for it to exist there because that's exactly why that moment is so captivating. You see? So that's the refutation of the argument. Yes? No, one second. Yeah, okay, we wanted yesterday. See, but now the question is, that's what we mentioned yesterday, that the successful man is looking for pleasure of approval and fame from those who are beneath him. That's precisely the image of the slave. That's exactly what it means. It means that he is waiting for the approval, and it's worse than a slave because a slave is at least a slave to somebody who's superior to him. But over here, he is a self-enslaved. He created a self-enslavement, and that's why. So most of the time, he walks around a slave. But occasionally, when he gets this great recognition from those who are his inferiors, but he has placed them in a superior position, he feels a tremendous elation. You see? So a person would be insane to think that this is a lifestyle that in any way could give an individual satisfaction. And it's just totally nonsensical. It's completely nonsensical. Because that's exactly the life of the success-oriented individual is precisely the life of the slave. But it's much worse. Because the slave, at least there's some rational system of slavery, where you have a master and you have a slave. Hopefully the master is a superior person than the slave. But over here, the individual who thinks that he's superior is basing his superiority on the acclaim and the approval and the recognition of those individuals who he considers to be inferior, which is an enslavement to a lower element. And he gains elation when the master gives him a certain kind of approval. This is completely inherent. You follow me? So the argument fails. The argument it's an absurdity. You see, and that's why we mentioned yesterday that most of the pleasures of life are those kind of pleasures. Because you see, that's why it says, Banisi li batim, Asisi li krumim. Everything is li. Why does Shlomo say li? because he knew right away that there's no reason to experiment in the areas where most human beings find their satisfaction, and the fact that the things that they're interested in, the homes, the cars, whatever it might be, botanism is a big thing. So the bias really is for somebody else. So that's a not totally nonsensical kind of involvement. The Shlomo wouldn't do it. That's just like self-enslavement. Self-enslavement was not the thing that he was going to experiment with. That it's true, while most of the world is engaged in that kind of a thing, that is no reason for Shlomo HaMelech to set up an experiment on, because it's simply, your mind tells you immediately, your little analysis tells you this is crazy, this is ridiculous. He's enslaving himself to somebody else. He's living in this kind of a house because he's excited that when somebody comes in, they like it. So he's doing it for the other person. That's complete enslavement. Or this kind of a car, whatever it might be. But that's the average mentality. That's the mentality of the balabas. Balabas means, we said the term balabas is, it's not arbitrarily, it's a bias, because that's usually the entity. It's usually the entity that the person is preoccupied with. That kind of pleasure he's not doing. That's why it says bonisi liba or sisi likrum. The li is significant, because the li means that he immediately rooted out that realm of satisfaction and enjoyment. That was completely gone. Because there's no reason to go into that. It's simply stupid. Okay? So what remained? So now all the other pleasures remain. And what were those pleasures? So then he goes through, he sets up, the question that he was raising is, if you remove the enslaving pleasures, those things which people do for others, so if you remove those, is there anything left? Or is man simply not capable of any kind of pleasure? So the experiment was to indulge in pleasures that are completely free from the enslavement aspect, just for the sake of the thing itself. Okay, so that was the thing. Now take a look. That's an interesting thing. Which things did he choose? Okay, so he mentioned, and he did it. He did enjoy them. He didn't enjoy them. He made many things. Asisi li edalti maser, bonisi li batim natati li krum. Okay. And asisi li gano sufadesim vanatati van eitz kol peri. Asisi li brechos moyen, mahashkos mem yaret someach eitzim. Kanisi avad moshvachos mei vayis hayoli. Gam mikne yivak of atzon arbe hayoli. Mikol shayi lachone brishlan. Kanasti li gam kesen zav. Muskos mulach vandinas. Asisi li sharem vashoros. That's it. Okay? That's it. Again, I mentioned something. I think the emphasis on the li, the reason why emphasis and re-emphasize it again and again, is because it is such a common phenomenon. And we mentioned yesterday that anything that a person enjoys, if in his anticipation of the enjoyment, he imagines in his mind how he will feel if somebody else will see it, he could know immediately that kind of a thing he's doing not for himself but for somebody else. It's a form of enslavement. I think that would be a good rule, a general rule. You see, that the person be able to use to test himself to see whether this thing he's doing it for himself or for somebody else. Somebody else, obviously, is slavery. So the way is, I would say, that if in the anticipation, I think we mentioned last year, the anticipation of the, we're talking about the anticipation of the enjoyment. The anticipation of the enjoyments is an extremely important component. If in the anticipation that thought occurs to him, then he could know pretty much that that's the reason why he's doing it. So I would say that's a thing that could be, because it's a very powerful, you see, it's a very powerful thing and very prevalent and common, but it doesn't make it any more reason, doesn't give any more reason to experiment with it. Once the person sees through the facade and it's nonsensical, he's not interested in it anymore. It was just even though millions of people don't see through it, that's not a reason for him to use that as an experiment. So that was dismissed immediately. Okay, and that's why the only thing that remained was li. Only those things which have nothing to do with anyone seeing or knowing about it, just for himself. Okay, and what were those things? Okay, So the things were, yes.
Is it because there's no point in going there, or is it once you know the area, you can't do it?
No. There's no reason for it, because it's a thing which is, it's like saying, would a guy try to be a slave so that he'll enjoy when his master one day gives him a pat on the back? Would you do that? There's no reason to experiment with this. It means that the essential thing is misery. So, I mean, it's stupid. Okay? That's what I'm saying. Even though I would premise that that is the enjoyment of most people, but that he ruled that out immediately because it's not worthy of any kind of experimentation. It's just total slavery. That's enslavement. That is misery. I would say the more, this is the most of humanity, the Vanderbilts, the mansions, and the homes, and all these things, that's actually, it's a peric in Tehillim, on the one you can say in the base level. They build homes, and then they lay a domos, and the fantasy of the homes, and that's basically the whole, it's a peric in Tehillim. If you look at the parak in Tehillim, he goes through this kind of a fantasy. But that wasn't his experiment. Shlomo HaMelech was not interested in that. Okay, that was not his experiment. You got it? Right. Go through the Purushim. You see, that's where he discusses the Abokumor of Chelam Roshim Salol. That's basically where he Dovah Melech analyzed that one. But that wasn't Shlomo's thing. Shlomo was after that, and he was just going. He was trying to see if there could be enjoyment for men besides that kind of a thing. Those were the things he was going to find more. Yes.
You say if the person has the idea of ever seeing a sin, then he gets that design motive. Is that because that motive destroys the other?
I would say because that motive is so overpowering that if it appears in the anticipation that one could be pretty well assured that that's the motivation of the whole thing. The thing is, in other words, when dealing with the psychological processes, you have to know the strength of the thing you're dealing with. And if a thing is extremely powerful in its nature and it appears on the scene, you can be pretty sure that's what it is. As a general rule, but that's the cause of the thing. That's the cause. That's the underlying cause. So that's something which a person would rule out. I would say without a doubt, there is no question that in this area, the biggest slaves were the people who were the owners of these mansions and these big homes. There's no question about it. I would say the bigger home, the bigger slave. That's the direct proportion. Because that's what they're doing. And I don't think they doubt about that in terms of the world. And that's the same thing with the image of successful businessmen. All these things are total slavery. But that's what I'm saying. It's a very powerful force because of the way the human psyche is set up. And as powerful as it is, and as predominant and as common and as ubiquitous as it is, it's still not worthy of any consideration because a thinker immediately sees through that and is not going to do that. It's just insanity. It's just crazy. The fact that it's prevalent and common and even powerful in nature doesn't make it worthy of experiment. That's the point I want to make it. Okay? That's why everything's Lee. Everything's Lee. I don't think there's one case here that Lee is missing. At first, every case has Lee. So therefore, he's saying, now the question is reduced. Are there enjoyments for a human being? Basically. Remove those, that category. Now, but are there enjoyments? A person alone. Okay, if a person would be the only one in the world, what would he do? Would he want to live in a beautiful home with all the things that he has, the gardens and he goes through all the luxuries that he could that he could possibly put together? Yes, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, imagine you're pointing out the I guess the fraud of the people going after those prices. So imagine that you most of the arms involved.
That is true.
Program,
well, that's for sure.
Which guy is more
fluid?
Which guy is more of a
slave? Which guy is more? Yeah, yeah, there's no question about it. Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. You're right. It is an amazing thing. No, it's absolutely true. And I'll tell you something else. If there weren't those people, I don't think you'd have the other people. Because one feeds on the other. There would be no sense in trying to impress somebody if no one's going to be impressed and the whole thing's gone. So one thing feeds on the other. I mean, the fantasy of these people feeds on the fantasy life of the other people. But the point is, I mean, that explains also what I mentioned before, Aaron's point, that if you take one of their lives, you always find misery. But it has to be that way. Because it would be like saying if you went into a slave's life, I'd find a miserable person. If you went into a person that was very happy, you gave him a piece of bread, you finally stopped him. He's actually miserable most of the time. It's got to be. It's not possible. Otherwise. But let's take a look at the enjoyment. Nevertheless, he goes back to these enjoyments, and he wants to see if they could give a person any satisfaction. Okay? So what are the things he has? A home. The next thing he has is the next thing he has is interesting. I mean, some of them you could understand. There's a bonisli button, a tatili krumen. Okay? Karam is something which we don't understand today. And we don't have but karam is a very important thing. Because you see, karam is always a mushel. Like, for instance, it's a mushel even regard to Kral Yisrael. The Kral Yisrael is a karam shel HaKadosh Baruch. There's a kamish lilafanai. A karam was something which is different than ganas or pardesim. A karam is something which is the person loves. It's the apple of the person's eye. Why? Because it's something which is beautiful. It gives off fruit, and it's also a source of wine. It's a karam is a very special thing. We don't have it today, but like karam novas. You see, the karam was a big thing in the time of the Nevi'im. The karam was a very big item. Why? Because it really is like multifarious. It's fruit, it's beauty, it's wine, it's a source of wine. It's something which a person loved. The person loved this karam. It's just like a karam is a love object. You see? Yeah, that's right. Karam, that's one. That's exactly. Yeah. Karam is a big thing. Right, we don't have it in today's society, so it's hard to appreciate. But it was something that was a very meaningful possession for the person. It's a very multifarious kind of enjoyment from it. And then the next thing he has is ganas upardesim. Ganas upardesim means that you see how little we enjoy life. I mean, because the thing is that you go to the supermarket. But that's not really, that's only a secondary kind of, that's like a substitute. I mean, the real enjoyment is you have your own crops growing in the backyard, and you go in and you take them, and you're fresh. This is lacking something on the supermarket. Right? So, and pardesim also. Pardesim means it's not just the home, but the grounds. I mean, the grounds are a big thing. Walking after a meal, a person walks into the pardes and beautiful gardens. It's a different kind of experiment. I mean, we don't really have that much luxury to read the Shlomo Melech. All these different nuances, these are different features. I mean, it means not just a beautiful mansion, a beautiful home, but after the home, after the meal, you walk into the pardes and the food is right, picked straight from the garden, the ganas and pardesim. And then he says, very nicely, Benatati Vlamates Kol Peri. Not just a few fruits here, it has an apple tree, it is. Kol Peri, every type of variety, like endless varieties. So he walks into the paradise and experiences not just qualitative enjoyment, but the quantity. Quantity is also very important. So then he goes on and he says, Asisili Brechos Mayim Lahashkos Mayim Yarat Someachetu. What is that? Funny thing, all of a sudden, Asisli Brechos Mayim Lahashkos Mayim Yarat Someachetu. What is what is he doing there? Yarat Someachetu. It's Someachetu, so what? Now, what he means over there is that's another enjoyment. Like, if you ever went to New York City, you see on top of the roofs some of the penthouses. So in the back, I mean, on the roof, they have gardens over there. And that's not just a garden. You see, that's something exotic because it doesn't belong there. You see, to have something which doesn't belong in its, it belongs in a different part of nature. It's found naturally in a certain place, but to transplant that into your onto your property is a different kind of enjoyment. And you have to be sensitive to the enjoyment. You have to understand. You have to be sensitive. But there is such a thing. Brechos, that's like you see. Seasonally brechos mayim lahai. It's irrigation. Mashkos meant to have your own forest. A forest doesn't belong in your backyard because you need water, but when it's not there, so you irrigate and you artificially bring in that which is necessary for this thing, so you can have your own forest. It's not so much the forest. That's exotic. That's the exotic sense. That's a sense of the exotic. I have something here that nobody could have ordinarily. It's not an adjunct because nobody could have it. It's a sense of the exotic. It's not that he wants to show somebody. That's nonsensical. What? Yeah, it's a certain enjoyment of having the exotic. It's like transplanting a world that belongs somewhere else into your private domain. You see? It's like, I don't know. It's hard to... It's probably something like when you have the fish. That's what it is. Like a fish tank is a real. What you're really trying to do is take the bottom of either ocean or the bottom of a river, and you're trying to capture that in your home. You see, that's a sense of that's what it is. I mean, that's what the enjoyment. I'm just saying. that's the exotic. That's what he's saying. You know? That's the thing. Bringing in having, but he's doing it on a grander scale. There's a little. It's from America. I mean, it's a person, small guy. You know, small guy. Small guy does it in a little fish tank. You know? Shlomo Melech, you're talking about, you're going to do it, you do it right. You know what I mean? You create a woods in your backyard. You know what I mean? That's something. You know, like, that's a different kind of a thing. That's... No, he did it right. He'll save you the trouble. See? That's the one thing that stands out. You know what I mean? Like all of a sudden, the Sisley Brechus Man, Lashkas Man, Yats Mechet. That's the exotic. That's the enjoyment of the exotic. Okay. Kanisi, it doesn't mean, and again, it doesn't mean because nobody else could have it. That's again going back to the slave mentality. You know what I mean? It's simply that there is intrinsically such a satisfaction, you know, like without other people. Okay, now it's like this. Kanisi avarim u'shvachos uvnei vayis hayali. Okay, that's a big one. Because the avarim u'shvachos means that a person, the biggest possession that a person can have is another human being. I mean, that's the problem with the world. I mean, that's what the world problem. But that's what it means. It means avarim u'shvachos uvnei vayis. So that's a different kind of a thing to have servants. Again, not because of the sense of self-importance. That would be a delusion, because how could you get a sense of self-importance from somebody who's inferior? It doesn't make any sense. But it means to have at one's disposal a human being that serves them. That's the finest kind of servitude that a person could have. Much, much better than the best computer. I mean, you see, they're always trying to get to the robot. You know what I mean? That's an attempt, but this is greater than any robot, a human being. Avadim Shvachas. That's a different sense of a different kind of the interest that he needs. A different what? Yeah, that's it. But that's not funny. Shlomo Melech didn't have a problem with that. That's why he was the one to make that experiment. You see. Yeah, bnei bayis servants. Yeah, avodah mishpachas bnei bayis. It's two categories. Avodah mishpachas are those people that brings in the wood. I mean, avodah mishpachas. But bnei bayis is a higher level. Ven meshek beisi yuda mesek aliezer. I mean, it's a personal, it's a different kind of a thing. Yeah, that's like a personal, on a very close personal level, an intelligent individual that understands you and knows your needs. And somebody you can even confide in certain times. You might talk to him a little bit. You know, he's a different level, different kind of a phenomenon. I guess like a butler. I guess a butler would be there. But that's an enjoyment. I mean, a butler is a something. I just want to say, Shlomo Melech was not one to simply to dismiss these things. You see from what he says, he was sensitive to every pleasure. A person that's insensitive is not worthy of anything. I mean, insensitive is there something wrong with it? There's something wrong. Well, that's what Yerushalmi says. If a person can't enjoy life, is insensitive, then he's a balmon. It's a balmon. He's insensitive. Shlomo was not insensitive, but he wanted to analyze all these different enjoyments. Is there anything in it for himself? I mean, is there anything real here? Real here, okay? So, and then it's like this. I don't know this one I'm saying. Gam mikne bakar vatzon harbei ha'olim, mikol she'olim fonim Yerushalayim. I don't know what exactly that is. That is, I don't know exactly. I mean, what that is. It sounds like mikne book of its own, like everything. Like, I don't know exactly. But I cannot think I'm kesef azov schools from Lachem Amdinos. That is certainly again. It's kanasti li gam kesef azov. That means the schools from Lachem Amdinos. It means, in terms of his security, his sense of financial security, and also the as a melech, the sense of a melech. You see, that's really what the Torah asks. The melech can't have because that's a certain enjoyment that doesn't allow the melech. But you see, he did because he said it's not going to bother. That was one of the things that was over. So me, he says the reason is because but me it's not going to affect. Okay, so, but that's a different. That's an enjoyment of a melach. Sgulas melach and lamedinos. It's not an ordinary person can enjoy such thing. That's a certain enjoyments are only for certain individuals. For a melach, there's a concept of having a treasury of the king, It's a different kind of enjoyment. It's different from melach. It's different from regular. An ordinary person is not the Can't have enjoyment. Then Asisi Misharim Visharos, and now he's talking about music. It's Sharim Visharos, male singers and female singers, the Sanugos B'nei Ha'odom. The Sanugos B'nei Ha'odom, and then you have those two words, Shido V'Shidos. Shido V'Shidos, yeah, Sharim Visharos is music. Yeah, and Sharim Visharos is music. Okay, so now you have the enjoyment of music, I mean, the stereophonic systems. Those kind of enjoyments, and yeah, right, that's right. I mean, you see, nothing's changed except that with today, you have the mechanical, but yeah, the real people, the real music. Now Shiva Vishidos, there's a question of what it means. Rashi says it means chariots. That'd be like today's cars. Okay, Mach voice noi, Eglo stuff. Okay, Shiva Taylor, the Russian is more mashma like Rashi. The Ibn Ezra says a strange thing. The Ibn Ezra says that it's nashim, because he says that over here it has to mean that. What really convinces him is that it means that, because it says from all these things he doesn't mention that. You see? He says, where's the Ibn Ezra over here? He says. But he says, "Vinyan shirushis heim hanoshim, the yora aleim the sanugos bnei oda." Okay. Vaod shehiskid dive kol taivas ha'olam. He mentions all the possible taivas, every luxury. And me binyan onatia o mikneos gula v'shmo ashirim ve'in zechol hanoshim. So he says, "There's got to be. Nothing else remains." But you see that Rashi didn't learn that way, and Chazal apparently didn't learn that way. It's an interesting thing. Because Rashi learns that it means car. I mean, what today's cars, but beautiful chariots. That's a big thing. I mean, that is a powerful emotion. I mean, you see today, for most people, the most powerful emotions are in the home and the car. I mean, that's it. They'll do anything for that. So it would be strange. I think it would be very strange to omit that, to omit the chariots, you see. But let's take Rashi. But what about the Ibn Ezra's Kashak? What happened to Nashim? I mean, it's all Tivus, all of Mazah, all the Tivus, and it looks like we forgot the biggest one. I mean, Tivus Nashim, most people say. That's the suicide bombers. Yeah. What? Food, ganos, padesim, no lack of food. Buck of its own. I guess that's pretty right. Maybe that's buck of its own. It's fresh supply of meat. Constant. Everything is available. That's what it is. That's buck of its own. Meat made buck of its own. And in tremendous supply. Everything in great supply. You don't have to think about it. It's there. Ears, right in front of your eyes. Nothing to worry about. Everything you can see. That's a certain kind of a tremendous pleasure. I mean, you have to admit, this is a good setup. Yeah. You want a fancy chair, you can get a fancy one. They got the best horses. The best horses from the Mitzrayim run. You got the good horses, not just an ordinary horse.
They came out with the original Model T chariot.
Yeah. So what do you say? But according to Rashi and according to Chazal, it doesn't mean Rashi. I mean, according to Rashi, means chariot. So what about the Ibn Ezra's Kasha? The Ibn Ezra's Kasha says that's lacking. After all, you're telling me every nuance of every taiva in every conceivable way. I mean, basically, that's what he shows you. Goes through all the taivas that a person can imagine. And it's true, that one's missing. It's not a taiva. I mean, are you crazy about that? So what's the answer according to Rashi? What's the answer according to Rashi?
Well, No.
When I say other people doesn't, I don't mean it doesn't involve other people in the. I mean, it doesn't involve other people in what they think or what their fantasies are. I don't care what it's for me. It's purely for me. This is my thing. I enjoy it myself. I give it, nobody else in the world. Doesn't make any difference. But nashim is something that he's going to need. Adam Rishon would like to have that on my some levado. So that's something that a person would see me. Yeah, Aaron? I think the reason is very, very, very simple. That, again, as to what we said before, he didn't experiment on things that don't require any kind of experimentation that a person could see immediately that it's stupid. Okay? And that's why the slavery situation is not necessary. But Shlomo knew that man, the unsublimated pleasures, are not for man. They just, a person that thinks that that's what their pleasures are, just is not talking about man. It's talking about an animal, but not man. Man, for man, those pleasures are, first of all, they can't occupy enough in the time frame. You see, most people, that the low life individuals, you know, that's all they think about all day, and they themselves joke around, yeah, but how often can they engage in it? You know, the human body doesn't even permit the amount of time that would be necessary for a person to really consider this a major thing in their life. And that's why you see that people don't really, I mean, it's something which is, people value it. They don't. It's a pleasure, and even a great pleasure. But it's not something around which a person can build his life, or really feel that this is something that's going to satisfy them. First of all, for the simple time factor, but much more than that, because two reasons. Because the thing is that one is the way the human psyche is structured. It's not structured. It's structured for sublimation of those of the instinctual drive. That's the way a person is. And any understanding of the human psyche will show you that it's just not possible for a human being to think that this is going to serve as an essential source of pleasure in life, or give them pleasurable life. As a matter of fact, most people think, and since the Rambam is among them, that enjoyment, as powerful as it is, comes from a negative. In other words, the enjoyment in the instinctual and sexual act really is an enjoyment of a release more than a positive kind of thing. And that the Rambam basically maintains that wasn't given to man for pleasure. That wasn't given to man for pleasure, which means that structurally, if you really understood it, you would not view it as a place to go for a positive gain and pleasure. But the sense of pleasure is a removal of pain. It's a direct removal of pain. So again, the fact that the individual senses pleasure is no indication, is a weak argument as to whether that activity is a genuine pleasure. What Shlomo HaMelech concluded was that there is only one possibility for a genuine pleasure in man, and that's in the realm of the sublimated. But in the basic instinctual itself, it's not possible for a person to, only a fool will think that that's going to give him a good life. That having a life that revolves around that is going to give him pleasure. That's not possible. Yes. What? That's a good question. What? No. I would say that on the surface, you're right, that is sublimated. But the truth of the matter is that a knowledge of psychology shows you that it is a form of insanity. Right. That the individual in love is under a tremendous compulsion and acts in a way that most people would consider not rational. You see? And it's a state in which the individual is totally in a state of compulsion and loss of freedom of the self. If you understand the psychology of the love situation, you'll see why psychologists equate that with abnormal, insane kind of states. And also love crazy. You see, the world recognizes it on a certain level. But the state of being in love is a state where the individual has lost his freedom, his or her freedom. That state. And it's not a state. No, there's no question about it. And I say, you see, people are in love do crazy things. I'm saying that's the good Galveston. Because they experience pleasure, so they will say that the pleasure, wherever the person experiences pleasure, say the pleasure is a great thing, without looking at the greater framework. The greater framework is a state where the person is completely under the control of the idea of the other person. It's really, it's a state of enslavement. It's not a state of freedom. Sorry. But that is true psychology. You understand the psychology shows you what it is and why it is that way. But the individual love is completely under the force of that other individual. You see, and under the control of that other individual, and there's a low estimation of the self, and the other individual is overestimated, and it's a complete form of slavery, not freedom. So that's why I would say that he outruled that. Outruled. What? In line with all the other. That's correct. The only things that he has, that's why it's good, clear why he only has these things. Because these things are the only things that remain if you rule out all the other things. Yes.
If the primary instinct is a release, and how does
No, that's no problem. Because it's a release because of a buildup of tension. You see, but if it's rechanneled, the energy is rechanneled, so then there could be enjoyment. In other words, the reason why His question is, Dan's question is a psychological question, that if the enjoyment of the instinctual is a release, it's not a positive thing, so then how is it possible that you could have a sublimated enjoyment? That's not a problem. Because the reason why the enjoyment is the enjoyment of a release is because there's a buildup. But the energy, if it's siphoned off into sublimated areas, so then the person can experience enjoyment. Okay? That's not a kasher. Not a kasher. It's not doomed because of its initial objective or aim. But that's the nature of man. That's his whole question. Can man really have the question? Shlomach is reducing the question of if man can have enjoyment in life to this. Can the sublimated enjoyments, are they enjoyable? That's what it really boils down to. When you remove the nonsensical ones, again, I mean, the instinctual again is one that's probably the most prevalent. I mean, but the prevalence does not warrant it being an object of the experiment. It's down to the sublimated enjoyments. But you see, music is there. Music is a sublimation. Music is a sublimation. Is a sublimating form of enjoyment. Music and the privation and the sense of security. It is not like Chazal say, then he says he enjoyed everything. He says, the Gadalti, he says, the Cholosha Sholo, Aine Lo, Atzalti Mehem, Lomanat is leaving me Kol Simcha. Lomanat is leaving me Kol Simcha. He leaves me Somech, Mikola Moli, Vizer Yachelki, Mikola Moli. So he says, so Chazal say, Mikol Simcha, he said, Chazal say, even Simchas Osha. What does it mean, Simchas Osha? Simchas Osha with this, the biggest issue is in the world. Now it means even that psychological enjoyment. Every psychological enjoyment. This amazing thing is the Tigran Yonasan Ben Azil on this. It's unbelievable. Because Tigran Yonasan Ben Azil says like this. He says it goes on something else. It's a medrash. Rashi quotes the medrash. He says like this. And he says that what were these? He says, just a second. He says, Vigdalti, ach, in the beginning, is Gesi Ovodin Tovin, the Yerushalem, Bonisi Li Votin Base Mukdisha. It's amazing. So the Russians, the Chazal say it's going all on the, he's going, this is not going, Chazal interpreted not on the simple physical, but they interpreted on religion, yeah. Base Mukdisha, Lachapra al Yisrael, Base Mikiras Malka, the Idron Psil Levay Midrasha Drabonon, Uvulam Uvais Dino Avnim Psilin Samon Yasfin Hakimaya, made a place, a beautiful place for Chachamim to sit. The Dainin, Yas Dino, Avdis Bursaya Deshain, the Fidel Mos of Malchuson, Tigas Chamin Biyavna, he said, I made Kromen, beautiful gardens in Yavna, why? Kol Kovel Kamen the Inva, Lemishni Mihon Chamra to give wine, he says, to who? Anov Rabbone Sanhedrin, for the greatest Talmid Chachamim. Va'af l'nascha chamar chadas va'atik al madbacha. So it's an amazing thing. What is this? So that's what he did. This was the experiment. According to Chazal, it wasn't the simple experiment that we're talking about, the luxuriating, the sublimated. It was really sublimated. It was the enjoyment of building a Beis HaMikdash, the enjoyment of creating a place, like a lot of people have Balabatim, like good Balabatim. What's one of their greatest enjoyments is a Talmid Chacham. The Talmid Chacham comes and they take care of him. Well, that's really what he's saying. In other words, to entertain Talmid Chachamim and to build a Beis HaMikdash and the Mizbeach. I mean, this is, people say this is the greatest thing. Like I was talking to somebody not too long ago. I was talking about he wishes he had more means. I said, what would you do? He says, I would have the greatest Talmid Chachamim in my house. I would take care of them. I would give them whatever they want. You know, I mean, this is what he's saying. This, according to Chazal, is a very deep Chazal. He's saying that those are the enjoyments that he was talking about, not the enjoyments of the paradise, I don't think it's a tatar sasra. I think what Chazal is saying is that he studied every possible kind of enjoyment. You see? And, but what is the end? But the end is those enjoyments, most people think, oh, those are good enjoyments. No. The end is, you see, in the end, those enjoyments are no good either. See? What is the end? The end, he says like this. He says, what? Yeah, talking about another one objective. But the, he says, yep. The greatest thing, like I was talking to somebody not too long ago. I was talking about the, you know, he wishes he had more means. I said, "What would you do?" He says, "I would have the greatest Talmid Chachamim in my house. I would take care of them. I'd give them whatever they want." You know, I mean, this is what he's saying. This, according to Chazal, is a very deep Chazal. He's saying that those are the enjoyments that he was talking about, not the enjoyments of the paradise. I don't think it's a tatar sasra. I think what Chazal is saying is that he studied every possible kind of enjoyment. You see? And, but what is the end? But the end is those enjoyments, most people think, oh, those are good enjoyments. No. The end is, you see, in the end, those enjoyments are no good either. See? What is the end? The end, he says like this. He says, what? Yeah, talking about another one objective. But the he says, yep. Ufanisi, the istakiras anor b'chol ovdi b'yavodu yodi uveturchi b'trochis l'mebad v'ocholo chavolo usfiras rucha. The less Moshe b'hon tchos shimsha ba'al mohadein Elohim isli agashlim al avoda tov al amadasa. That's the way things happen. In other words, there was those in the enjoyment of being Mahane the Talmud Chacham, Talmid Chacham, and taking care of them and being in a Migdash and all these things, the psychological enjoyment as a psychological enjoyment was not worth it. It was valueless. It's an amazing thing. It's an amazing thing. You see the depth of Chazal in the, I mean, Shlomo Melech, it was not worth it. The only thing he had was Al Modasi. And so far as his soul was attached to the real ideas, and this was an expression of that attachment that he had, but the enjoyment, the psychological enjoyment, that he was Mahana Talmid Chachamim, and that wasn't worth it. That wasn't worth it. It's an amazing thing. Amazing. Every kind of, there isn't a thing that's missing. It's an unbelievable, every kind of sublimated pleasure that the person could have, you see, was included in this experiment. And the end was that it was nothing. But now's the big question. Why was it nothing? Because it says he enjoyed it all. That's what it says. He says he wasn't insensitive, wasn't a person, he wasn't an ascetic. He was very capable of enjoyment. More capable than any other person because he had enjoyments of malachim that most people don't even have. And then the ability and the wealth to bring it about and every kind of conceivable thing in every single way. Who could be Mahanat HaMid HaChom Mor HaShlam Malach? And Chazal said he was. When they came in, they were giving the Sanhedrin, was giving the biggest covet, and he sat them down and surrounded by beauty, and it was unbelievable. Everything they wanted, they had. He had all those things. No one could do it better than him. And nevertheless, he says, even though he wasn't insensitive and experienced all those enjoyments, it was all nothing. Why? All those pleasures, all those enjoyments, and every level, and in terms of the physical sublimated, every form of sublimated pleasure, every thought, every kind of psychological satisfaction, and everything is nothing. He says, "If I need any b'chol maaseh she'asi yodav amoshamot lasminekol hevel, it's empty. Urus ruach means depressing. Ve'ein yisrael tachas hashemesh." You see, and before it says, "B'chol she'shol le'asav le'manati esnibi mikol simcha ki libi sameach mikol amali." You enjoyed it, nice journey. Ve'zeh yochel ki mikol amali. Chazal says Machlekes, Rav and Shmuel. One says Zez, what was his makel, and the other says Rashi interprets to be a coast that he drank water out of. He said it. So what is the solution? What is the answer? Why? I mean, if he had all these enjoyments, either he had or he didn't. If he had it, if he didn't have it, something is totally insensitive. So that's the end of it. So he's just saying, I don't like these things. So that's like an average person says it. I don't like this. I don't enjoy it. That's not experiment. I mean, it just has no sensitivity for it. But he had the sensitivity and he enjoyed it. So what more does he want? So how could it fail? I mean, it seems like it's an experiment that intrinsically cannot fail, because either he enjoys it and the experiment is successful and it shows you those are enjoyed, or else if he doesn't enjoy it, it's just insensitive. There's no experiment. So what's the answer? See, what's the answer? The good. Shlomo's question is not the good. We mentioned it last year. The good. The Torah tells what the good is. There's no question about that. But his question is simply a psychological question. He's pursuing the truth for the sake of the truth. It's a psychological question. Can man have these psychological, are these satisfactions or not? And rooting out the ones that don't make any sense. Now you're down to these, but these are sublimated enjoyments. Are they enjoyable? That's his question. It's not a question of what the good is. The good, the Torah already taught about the good. You don't need to know about that. That already, clearly the real good is like Moshe Rabbeinu taught us, the Avos Hashem, Lalechas Midrachav, Lishma Mitzvosov, because that's the good. That is not good. His question is fine, that's the good. But the question is, is there psychological enjoyment? That's an important question. Separate question.
Is he talking in a relative term?
It seems he's talking in an absolute term.
An absolute?
That's what it sounds like. You see, what it means is, I think what it means is like this. You see, maybe it's a crazy idea, a new idea. But I think what he's saying is that there is no such thing as pleasure for man. That sounds like a crazy idea. No such thing as pleasure for man. Man doesn't want pleasure. Okay, I'll tell you. See, I think the key to the answer is in one word: ufanisi ani. See, ufanisi ani. That's what it is. Ufanisi ani b'chol masai she'asu yodai uva'omol she'amalti lasas. Ufanisi ani is the answer. In ufanisi ani, the whole thing fell apart. Which means like this: that if a person, you see, an animal is in a position where it can experience pleasure. But I would venture to say that man does not want pleasure. In other words, you take an enjoyment that a person has. A person has, let's say, you take a simple enjoyment, a good steak, okay? So the question is this. Does the person want the enjoyment of the steak, or does he want the knowledge that he's enjoying himself? In other words, like this. If you could give a person the enjoyment of a steak, but he will never know that he had it, you see, just a pure enjoyment, would the person want it? Exactly. See, a person is looking for pleasure, but he is not really looking for what he thinks. Because if he just had the pleasure without the knowledge of his having it, you see, he wouldn't want it. He really wouldn't want it. There's no kidding. He wants the knowledge that he's enjoying himself. You see? He doesn't want the enjoyment. If he wanted the enjoyment alone, all these things would be fine, because then he'd be enjoying himself. But what he wants is not the enjoyment per se. He wants to know that he's enjoying himself. You see? That's a different thing. That's a different twist. Once you have that twist, then the thing is not worth it anymore. You see? Then on the contrary, what? Then the effort is not worth it. The effort, you see, when a person enjoys something, it has to be worth, and I don't mean the effort, the physical effort, because obviously he didn't have to involve himself in his welfare. He was the wealthiest man in the face of the earth. So he had plenty of servants to do all the work. But it's not the physical effort that he's talking about. And that's why he was the one that could do the experiment, because another person has to exert physical, that's a detraction. They didn't have to do that, you see. It's the mental preoccupation with the fantasy. That's the amal. See, what he showed was that since if man really was directly after pleasure per se, then it would be possible. But the fact is that nobody really wants that. Nobody really wants pleasure. They want to have the thought that they have pleasure. But that thought is an acquisitive kind of a thing, you see. And since it's an acquisitive kind of a thing, the moment, that's why it says, Ufonisi, I mean, the moment he turned to look, you see, which is what he wants, the knowledge of the acquisition, that makes the whole thing worthless. The effort becomes worthless. There is no, the preoccupation with setting the thing up is lost because you aren't after that which you're setting up. You follow what I mean? Okay. In other words, if a person wanted pleasure, a person wanted the pleasure of a steak, okay, so then you say, okay, so it's a fair trade-off. He goes for the steak, and he has the preoccupation with the steak, and then he enjoys the steak. Okay. But if the person can't really enjoy the thing, because what he's after is not the enjoyment itself, but it's the knowledge that he's enjoying himself, which is a superadded kind of a phenomenon. So then he's once, you understand what I mean? So now it's a different kind of an enjoyment. That for that kind of an enjoyment, the expenditure of energy is not worth it. You follow? Because he really is removed from the thing itself that he's preoccupied with. You know what I'm saying? In other words, he's preoccupied with the type of the steak. But if he would get it, that would be a fair exchange. But if he's not capable because of his human nature to really get it, just all he's getting is the thought that he has it, so then it's not worth the whole thing. Once you realize that, it's something else. Exactly. That's correct. That's correct. What? That's what Aaron is saying is 100% sure. Why he says that he worked on all these things when in fact he didn't work on them himself. But that's for sure, that in order for these things to come about, the person has to put in tremendous amount of mental effort. The as a matter of fact, I mean, some of these, if you ever read about these people who, like the Vanderbilts and the creators, some of them had stopped work for months, stopped their business, because they just completely engrossed themselves in this project. You see, you can't do anything like that without a total mental preoccupation and tremendous sums of energy being involved. But the thing is like this, you see, if it's the fact, now why is it if it's the fact that you had the enjoyment that it's not worth it? Because you see, the fact that you had the enjoyment is a one-time thing. You know what I'm saying? If a person really would enjoy pleasure, so there is a duration. You see, there is the preparation, which of course is a painful thing because he has to go through a process of investment of energies, but then at least he reaps the succeeding experience over a period of time, which could be in proportion, you see. But if it's simply the pleasure itself is nothing, it's just a thought, so the thought is an instantaneous phenomenon, and therefore the effort is not worth it. You understand what I'm saying? In other words, the effort that he's putting into it, the psychological effort that he's putting into it, is for the pleasure. You see, but a person, a human being, isn't interested in pleasure. He's interested in that thought. But that thought is a momentary phenomenon. It is not a phenomenon, that kind of a thing about pleasure, which is not pleasure itself, about pleasure, the effort of the involvement is simply not worth it. In other words, if man wanted pleasure, that would be appropriate. But since man is not after pleasure, he's after the thought, once he has that realization that that's what he's after, the whole thing simply is not worth the effort. It's not worth the effort. That's correct. So that's why Chazal said, what was he left with? Vizel yachalti mikolamol. What was that? It means his cane, his makel, his cane, which means to say, what it means to say is that there is something that man can have. So now you're going to say that there's nothing. There's nothing except the physical necessities. No, his solution was that it's not nothing. There is something. See, makli means there is something that man can have beyond the physical, his physical needs, but it's a very, very small, a very small amount which is worthy of the satisfaction. But it's a small amount. It's a quantitative thing. There's a point of diminishing returns at a very small level. At a very small level. What? They see a makli and yet. See, functional things, but yet a makel is more than just functional. A makel is something which is kind of a sublimated thing also. It's makel, and he walks with it, he likes it. We don't use it today, but that kind of an idea. The concept is that there is a small, simple, but also not too far removed. In other words, that is worth it. His solution was not, there's nothing. There is something for man, but it's a very small amount above the necessities, above the basic necessities. There is something. But that's it. Beyond that, you get into the area of diminishing returns. That's basically the solution. That's the solution. That's correct. But it is an interesting solution, because he doesn't negate it completely. It's a good solution. It's a solution which is, he's not saying that there's nothing, because since man is a sublimated creature, there is something, but it's a very small amount above necessity. A very small amount above necessity. That's the, in that amount, it's worth it. And it's a good thing for him. But beyond, once he gets into the area of the fantasy, of the other things, the Phanisiani is never going to be worth it. Of course, the Phanisiani, when he looks back, he had it. Okay, so I had it. But the satisfaction that he had it will never be worth the involvement. He'll never do it again. See, he would never do it again. That's why, that's basically what he's saying. The Phanisiani is the problem. That's one thing. And I would say that makli is something that you can do without. It also is a psychological thing also. But makel gives a certain respectability. Makel has that aspect too. Makel is a kind of like an independence. You know, it's like there is something to it. It's a physical thing, psychological. It has a lot of a makel. I mean, even though I don't have it in today's society, but it was something that had a lot to it. There's a lot to it. You know, it was a sense of adam, also a certain sense of self-respect. I mean, a makel has a lot of facets to it. What? It wasn't a sword. It was like. You weren't considered fully attired unless you had a your makel, the cane, the makel. The makel is something which had psychological satisfaction. It was also practical, a certain amount of practicality which was beyond what you really needed. You see, but yeah. So his solution is that amount, a minimal amount above the necessities is enjoyable for man, and that sublimated enjoyment is worth it, but it's on a minimal level, basically, on a minimal level. Beyond that, the enormous investment of psychological energy into the thing, and that all he's going to get out of that thing is that he had it, is never going to be worth it. It's never going to work. Ufanisiani, the moment you have Ufanisiani, it's not worth it. And without Ufanisiani, it's not what he wants. See, the problem and the solution lies in the Ufanisiani. That's where the solution is. Ufanis, if he didn't have to be Pona, there wouldn't be any problem. But the moment he is Pona, and he has to, and then he looks at it, and what does he have of it? That he had the enjoyment? No, it's not worth it. But is nothing worth it? That's not true either. It's not nothing. Certain things, I don't know. I mean, it's not even go to the machlekes of whether it's makkel or not. But let's say it's makkel. But I don't think that makkel means a specific. See, makkel represents something. Represents a thing which is, see, the machlekes is one says makkel and one says the, his cups. Yeah, it's an interesting thing. His cups. See, I think the machlekes on that would be whether there is also some value in the psychological. See, the kos is simply a little enhancement of the physical. It's an enhancement of the physical. So if you say the kos, so you're saying that there is a kind of an enjoyment of a sublimated kind that's related to necessities. Person has a nice set of dishes, or you know, something like that. You know, nothing fantastic, but some amount that gives the person that kind of a sublimated enjoyment. If they say makli, it means psychological also. Because makli really means, makli is a sense of dignity and a sense of self-worth, a sense of independence. And the makli, convenience, it's multifarious, a lot of things in the makli. I think that's the machlekes. So if you say makli, it comes out that the solution was that on a minimal level, the psychological also is enjoyable, on a minimal level. Beyond the minimal level, the effort is simply not worth it because the reflection is too unsatisfying. Too unsatisfying. Yeah. No. That's what he's saying. He's saying even with the button addressing, even being the big donor, and even with being in Mahana Tamil Chachamim, all those satisfactions, he's saying is the same thing. They're all psychological satisfaction. There's no difference. There's not differentiating. There's no difference. It's an amazing fact. You would think they wouldn't want to tell anybody this. Because keep it quiet. No. But the thing is, that's true, but it doesn't mean that there's no good in doing that. I mean, that's what he says. That's what all of our bar. I mean, so far as the person does that for the real reason, he's not talking about it. He's talking about the sublimated enjoyment. You're looking for the pleasure that you were Mahana, a great Talmud Chacham. It's a great pleasure. Now let's talk about that pleasure. Forget about the sky. Forget about the Olam HaBa aspect. You know, just that psychological pleasure. Enjoy, yeah, that's not worth it. Because all the guy wants is to think that he did that. You see, there's no intrinsic thing in there. And the effort is tremendous, and the thought is instantaneous, and it's just not worth it. It's an interesting thing. That's what's in it. Any kind of psychological pressure, that's the solution. But the solution lies in Ufanisiani. Without Ufanisiani, nobody wanted that. Just to have pleasure, if a person can be put in a state of in a comatose state where he has pleasure for 70 years, nobody will want it. He wants to know he's having pleasure. He wants to know it. It's not the pleasure.
He's saying, I don't care about the pleasure.
It is.
Know that I have that thing that I don't care about.
That's correct. So what we're differentiating here is between, let me just make this clear. An animal has pleasure, but it doesn't know that it's having it. In other words, it doesn't have a state that reflects upon itself. You see, you understand what I mean? And when we say you know that you have it, we don't mean that you could have a pleasure without knowing it in a certain sense. And maybe my example of comatose is not a good example. That was not a good example. I just as an exaggerated example. But what I'm saying is that there is a knowledge, like a dog has pleasure. So a dog has pleasure, so there is a certain knowledge insofar as the pleasure is concerned, but you wouldn't call it can't reflect on itself. It's not a knowledge of reflecting on itself that it's enjoying something. See, but that in man is a necessary component. And it's a necessary component. Without that reflection, he wouldn't want, even though he would enjoy it. What? The self-awareness. No, the... Excuse me?
Right.
That's correct. You'll never be able to remember it. Right. You'll have it, but you'll never be able to. He's hypnotized. Okay? They wouldn't want it. What? Yeah, what's that? Reflecting. Reflecting. That's true. Or at least it looks like you had the pleasure. The appearance of the pleasure. That's the appearance of the pleasure. That's right. Of course, you never enjoy anything as busy taking pictures. But if you did, you'd have to have a picture. Yes. The depressing power. Oh, yeah. Okay, so the thing is like this, that insofar, that's, you understand, that's the point. That's the Ufonisiani. Ufonisiani means that there's an experiential knowledge which an animal has, of course. But with man, that's not the key. The key is the self-awareness of them. Yes. What? Okay. So now the thing is, yeah, one second. So why it hevel u'us ruach? The hevel is because it's simply, it's nothing. In other words, it's hevel because there's nothing there. You see, because it's not the thing itself. There's no substance there. If it was a substance of the pleasure, then it would be something real. But it's a hevel, it's nothing. And the Rosh Ruach is it must, whenever an individual fails in terms of his output or his investment of energies, it fails and there is a frustration, there must be depression. There must be, that's Rosh Ruach. Has to be. Has to be followed by depression. So therefore, the individual of necessity have to experience a depression because of the investment didn't meet with satisfaction, and he's going to have to experience a depression. That's the Rosh Ruach. That's the Rosh Ruach. Yeah. Okay. Any questions? Yeah. That's good. That's very good. They keep a makri of artes yard. I mean, I say yard and azer. That's what he meant. What do you mean? You mean cross it with a stick, and you just get across. He meant that that's all he had. That's what Rashi says. The makri means all I had was that. And not kesef, not zov, nothing. Just this. So, and then that's what Chazal means by makri. Makri reflects a small amount, the smallest amount above the necessities. That's what he meant. All I had was makri. It was that a little bit more than necessities. And that was my whole, that was the extent of my whole, My whole work besides the basic necessities. That's give makri. You're right. That's the same idea. That's the same concept of makri. That's what it means. That's what makri means. But that's what Shlomo is saying. The makri is the only thing that's worth. The makri is the only thing. It's not nothing. Not nothing. He's not a total ascetic. I'm saying nothing because man's nature is he's a sublimated being. But beyond a certain small point. Beyond a little bit beyond necessities, it's heavily restricted. Frustration and depression. Okay.
Sorry?
Yeah. I guess, yeah, you see, it would seem that he had to have the experiment to see whether, in fact, the pleasure itself has enough value. You see? But it doesn't. I mean, that's an experimental thing. Because a certain amount is into the pleasure. It's a quantitative phenomenon. And a certain amount is into the reflection. You see? So the only way a person can tell is by seeing how much energy man places in that experiment into the enjoyment and into the reflection. That's something going on from experimentation. Yeah. Fun? See, I mean, yeah, Danny's asking a question. What about the businessman that thinks he's getting pleasure? And see, that you can't, even though, that's a big mistake, that even though a person wants to, knows that what he wants is not pleasure, so he wants to be aware of the fact that he's having pleasure, he can't, if you impose a false awareness, he can't be truly happy if he's suffering misery. He can't change, that doesn't, all that means is a true awareness is what he wants. But if the machinery is completely distorted, that the false idea is not going to help him. He's going to experience pain. It's not possible. You know what I mean? The awareness has to be based on the legitimacy. It has to be a legitimate awareness, not a false idea. I mean, if you can give a guy a false idea, he's enjoying himself. When the distributions of his energies are causing pain, he can't be happy. He has to experience it. He has to feel it. That's not going to help him. So while he wants the awareness, it's got to be a real awareness. But he's talking about a real awareness. Okay. Now, Joel Granick brought a good point that it's the makel is a good object because it's just one object and it has multifarious satisfactions. So that's a good. That's why that mushel is very good. That it's just one thing. Then it's worth it. You know what I mean? When it's one thing that has a lot of different facets, it's not a lot of investments. You know what I mean? It's one investment. Very good. It's good.